the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
Welcome to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 274, Cinco Penguinos. I'm Mary Tomich.
And I'm Tom Lawrence.
That's right. And the reason for our episode name this morning is that this is the weekend of Cinco de Mayo, and it's also the weekend of PenguinCon. I don't even think they did that before, have they?
I don't think these two things have ever occurred. So this is a once-in-a-PenguinCon occurrence.
Once in
a penguin's life occurrence.
That's right.
Both things happening.
Yes, and those of you who are listening to the final version, which will be coming out soon, may notice that there are only two voices that you've heard so far, and that's because doing the show this morning is just Tom and me.
Yep. Yeah, Tony had to be somewhere for his wife's graduation. He mentioned before, so it is distant from here.
Yes.
And then Phil had
other commitments, I think.
He had a special project with work that was unable to be rescheduled. So he'll have some details for us. Maybe he won't. He does secret stuff.
That's right. So Tom, I guess that allows us then to use our new name for our duo, which is Dynamic Duo.
That's all we have today.
All right. Well, let's catch up and see what's been going on. So, Tom, I understood that you gave an excellent presentation yesterday.
I don't know about excellent, but hopefully it helps some people. At least I know it helped one person who's sitting in the front row here, because we have an audience for those of you just listening to this. Mm-hmm. And open source video editing, which is in-depth and extensive. So I did my best to try to give people kind of an overview of how to get started with it and start tinkering with it and where to find some resources. So I think it's an important thing is, you know, where do I find more? And I mentioned that there's a lot of YouTube channels out there. If you go and type in like Caden Live, how to... There's some people much smarter than me that have done some very clever things, and that's how I learned to do the things that are integrated into my workflow. But I shared with some of the tools of how we capture, like with OBS, and how we how I post-process and how we fix stupid audio problems, because especially I'm not an audio engineer. I'm a Linux guy trying to share things so that inevitably needs to... Oops, that fan was running while I did 2 hours of tutorial. And things you may want to cut out.
Wait. No, I just saw you twirl all those buttons, all these little audio things. So it looked pretty engineering to me.
I can fake it. I put something with knobs and it looks like... I probably should do a tutorial on how to set up a mixer board. Because then I could refer to it every time I forget where the plugs go.
Yeah, that would be pretty good.
You know, it's a driving force behind some of my tutorials. Is it's a better way for me to document how I did something. I had to refer back to one last week. We had an odd situation where we normally deploy these devices pre-set up. Well, one of my guys went out and installed it not set up. And I'm like, there's a way to do it remotely, and I couldn't remember how, but I made a tutorial on it last year for if you run into this situation, we normally don't. Well, somehow we did, and my tutorial was very helpful for me.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, those little nuances and things like that. Other than that, things I did do since our last recording, I had mentioned it that I was moving over to FreePBX. We finally got everything configured and set up on FreePBX for my business. So I may do some tutorials on FreePBX, what I love about it, what I hate about it.
What's it running on?
FreePBX runs on... I think it's CentOS is the base of what it starts for the 3P execution. I see people nodding their heads. See, I love when I have this confirmation of people who know more things than me. it runs on CentOS, and it's a open source PBX system. It does have some proprietary modules that I will mention out there, and it's owned by Sangoma. And this is one of those hybrid things we see, where we see open source projects that you can download and play with for free, but their business model is Sangoma sells phone systems, phone hardware, so they want to sell you free PBX or some of the commercial support modules for it. But with the free modules, you do things in a more manual way. All the commercial ones do is not necessarily give you features, they give you convenience. So yes, you can do everything from the more basic templates, but you buy the full version and you can do something, you know, more with a cool graphical interface. But a great tool. We moved moved my company over to it. It's been fun learning and setting it up and playing with all the menus and everything. It's daunting at first because it's confusing.
Have you made any phone calls?
Well, yeah, yeah. We actually we're making all of our inbound outbound calls.
Good.
And we started filtering all the spammers, and we're trying to figure out where to send them. One of my goals, if you haven't heard of this, Google it because it's hysterical. It's called Lenny, and it's a popular add-on for it, and it is a it's a whole voice prompt system that uses pauses in a person's voice, and it's designed to catch telemarketers. There's a collection of Lenny interactions where the telemarketer didn't realize he was talking to basically a pre-programmed robot that was to distract him. It's this old man just babbling on, oh, yeah, yeah, I can do that. I could get my credit card for you. And they, but he never does. Everything is like a lead-up. So these people lose their mind.
Yeah, that, you know, that sounds similar to, there's a guy, I think he's on, I want to say it's on Twitch, but maybe that's not the not the video site, but his name is Kip Boga, and he does, he interacts with these guys that call up as like Microsoft support, and he strings them along and just does all sorts of crazy things.
And there's a few videos of Lenny doing that with some of the tech support scammers. They just waste their time, and it's great because when you set it up, it can go to a recording so you can post, listen to it later. So it's just great, and it doesn't waste any of your time. It wastes their time. And if you're wasting their time, they're not bothering someone else. So you're doing a public service.
That's right. All right.
So what'd you do, Mary?
Well, you know, I don't know if I told you, I say you guys, but it's just you, Tom. I'm actually taking Spanish lessons.
Oh.
So, yeah, I'm going to learn how to say Linux in Spanish.
Your your pronunciation of the Cinco de Penguins.
Pinguinos?
Pinguinos.
Sí.
I like that.
Sí. Sí. Muy bien. But anyway, that aside, I did place an order with System 76 for a laptop.
Ooh.
One of two laptops that I'm going to be ordering. And I've also ordered machines from Zarezan, who's another Linux computer vendor. So, and my plan is once that whole order process is complete with System 76, I ought to just do a little comparison about the whole process because there are differences between the two companies, at least that I've seen so far.
Yeah.
System 76, they don't appear, at least at this juncture, to have the flexibility to put on different distros other than either Ubuntu or Pop OS. When I got my computer from Zarezan, I could select from a multitude of Linux OSs. Also, I had a special request for them, and I had two drives. I wanted to put the OS, my Linux OS, on one drive and then use a second driver. Or no, it was two partitions, and they set that all up for me. And I asked System 76, I put two drives instead of just one single drive in this laptop, and I said, I'd like to have the home drive on the second, or my home directory on the second drive, and the OS on the SSD. They couldn't do that for me either. So when I get it, I'm going to have to get that all set up, which is, you know, not going to be a problem. But sometimes it's nice to have that work done. But the difference now is that System 76 has been very responsive to me as far as the things that I've asked, and they've gotten back to me. And Zarezan, they weren't bad, but they just weren't as responsive. So, you know, it's kind of a...
Yeah.
You know, one side does this better and one side does this better. So.
And we covered in the last show, System 76 is bringing all their manufacturing back to the U.S., so that's exciting as well. And it's lot of it.
That may be why my system is still in assembly. And they told me at the beginning of the week, oh, it shouldn't take too long. And
I know they're transitioning. I don't know exactly what
it's on the plane.
There. Yeah, it's on the plane somewhere. But the nice thing is that they are becoming a U.S. manufacturer, and they cited reasons not really because of political or tariff reasons. It's really about iteration of product, being able to be directly in contact with your dev team producing it, and that seems to be an important factor.
Great.
So we're looking forward to that. That's exciting.
Yeah. So. So as far as what I've been up to, that's pretty much it.
Awesome.
Well, so I think next it's going to be going to move on to listener feedback.
Listener feedback.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
First question is, does a password reset sent to show at SMLR, does that count as feedback from Twitter? I've seen the discussion.
That was me.
Okay, it was you. I didn't see the response. I'd seen it come to there. We have a Twitter, and we're working
on it. Yeah, we just set up Twitter, and so we're going to be tweeting, actually, from it.
Yes, and we need to mention, for those of you listening, we have a phone number that we say, and that's wrong, and I probably shouldn't hit the button. We should have said listener feedback.
Yeah, we can cut that, maybe cut it out.
Yeah, because we got to get rid of the, we lost the phone number when Tony did some switching, and it's gone. So mm-hmm. We don't have the call-in. We never really got that many calls, because they always would call in, leave a voicemail, and we would count into our listener feedback. But moving on from the...
the Twitter account, the password Twitter reset. Account,
The piece of feedback that I did see has been regard to password managers.
We got several bits of feedback.
I think it was a few different from the same person, but it was feedback mm-hmm. and forth on password management, and it was related to our security talk. Now, I have not vetted, and maybe if someone can email us if they know as someone who's actually gone through and audited the code. So me and Phil have mentioned some of the password managers out there because they're very handy. They're very good for a lot of users. KeePass is a really good one for if you want to keep everything private. But LastPass is more practical to recommend to users. But, of course, it's closed source, so there's people who have different feelings about that. So Bitwarden is very similar to LastPass. And we had some feedback saying, hey, have you heard of Bitwarden? And, yes, a lot of us have heard of it, but until I'm not a security expert. So until, even though I can see the code, I don't understand the algorithms they use well enough to say they did it right or they did it wrong. LastPass has gone through independent code review and been vetted really well to make sure that they're implementing the cryptography properly. There was another one, the name eludes me, but they had someone got excited because it was another open source one that fell almost as quickly as it became popular because the security researcher, it took him about 5 minutes to go, wow, this is completely insecure because they just didn't implement cryptography properly. So although Bitwarden's out there, I think it's interesting. I'm excited for it, but until it's been vetted, I can't trust my passwords to it because they were able to, like I said, security researcher with a brief overview with the previous one that the name eludes me because it kind of went away so quick. I will address that. And we kind of went back and forth in some comments back with the person who had the feedback on it of have you heard of it with the same effect. We wanted to share that with you guys because that's something just because it's open source doesn't also mean it's secure unless you can understand the cryptography. And this is kind of the same debate that goes with some of the other different protocols to transport data like Telegram. They have used a weird algorithm, so it's hard to understand whether or not it's actually secure. So that's an important factor to think about in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was really all the feedback we had. Did you see any others?
Not that I can immediately recall.
I
just know that there was a bit of an exchange on the whole password, that whole password discussion.
Yeah, that's all I really had in my show notes for listener feedback.
Okay.
So we will move on to...
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
Distro Watch.
So Distro Fever.
Distro Fever, yes.
From which we will look at DistroWatch to make our comments and remarks about various distros.
Some of the new things coming up. I hear it in my head. It says Distro Fever. We check out the latest hot distros.
Sharing
it with everyone here.
I was going to say that. I think that was, if you scroll back up to the top there, Tom, is that Blankon up there at the top?
Blankon. I had not heard of that one.
Yeah, no. I did a little checking into it, and actually the system requirements for that distro are really pretty modest. I think you need 2 gigs of RAM, which is practically unheard of.
It's a Debian Indonesian-based distribution mm-hmm. with a custom desktop environment called Mono Kawari.
I'm gonna take a look at that. Kind of intrigues me the fact that whenever somebody comes out with a custom desktop environment.
Yeah, I like to see what they're thinking. See if they laid it out differently. They laid out more, mm-hmm. Different quirks or ideas we haven't heard before.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things that confuses people coming over from the Windows side because Windows are used to whatever Windows makes you use, and us Linux people will all use different desktop environments. So there's like this entire new concept. Like, what do you mean you don't just have to use what the distro forced you to use? I'm like, yes, welcome to the world of Linux. Sometimes there's entire distributions that under the hood is almost all the same. Just the interface on top is mm-hmm. What the difference distinguishing are. course, yeah. We have the Ubuntu and the Ubuntu release party that we had. So that was
I couldn't make it this year, unfortunately. How was it?
Good, good.
Was there a lot of Ubuntu released?
Yes, there was a lot of Ubuntu released, and I see few of people who went and gathered up their lanyards that we see
in
the crowd.
I'm kind of curious.
Here.
Let's ask the crowd. Say, of the people in the room here that are sitting here with us, how many do you use either Ubuntu or an Ubuntu-based distribution? And we've got, what, about three-quarters of the...
Yeah.
Three-quarters of the room, I think.
I'm going to say about 75% of you are using Ubuntu.
And those of you who do not, I'm kind of curious, what do you use?
Mac.
Okay. Any Mac. Fedora users in here?
Any what users?
Fedora, Red Hat. Okay. Got
Fedora, Red Hat.
All right. Got two.
How much do you like the partitioner when you...
I actually don't have a big problem with it. There's a little bit of a learning curve.
For you it might have been a little bit, but whenever I work with it...
I would not mark the partitioner as one of their strengths.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And for those of you on the podcast, they are saying we're just talking about the difficulties of that, which Mary has talked about before. Yeah. We're doing distro reviews.
Yeah. And once you get past it, it's a fine distro. It's just.
It is.
And yes, sir.
So I use Raspbian because I use a Raspberry Pi. I'm just curious, how many people have played around with a Raspberry Pi?
The question was just asked, how many people have played around or experimented with Raspberry Pi? And I think we had over half the room raise their hands.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe two-thirds, so.
Yeah, definitely.
So very good. And
we have a guy with his Raspberry Pi
right
here in the front row.
Friend of the show, Jay.
Friend of the show, Jay.
Yep.
So we also
that's a Retro Pi he's got.
Yeah, he's got the Retro Pi.
That's pretty cool.
We got to do an episode. Maybe we'll have Jay come on some Sunday, and just do an episode about the Retro Pi. He's in depth in that, and top to bottom from the customizing the case and everything. So there's a new Kali Linux out, which probably means there's going to be a new Parrot Linux out as well. Kali and Parrot are close cousins because they both are pen testing distributions. And so they offer a nice way to get started into pen testing. Please, I always note, use it on your own network or something you own. But they're pretty neat distributions to start doing application testing and pen testing on your own network. I actually use, and I thought about maybe one time I'll do a review, Parrot I like a little bit better. It comes a little bit more complete. They're not the tools really used by the hackers per se that are actual pen testers, but they're great because they're pre-configured tools with a lot of the defaults. And I use it to test against my own applications in my network to look for vulnerabilities. It's just an easy way to take and throw everything at it and see if my SQL dumps all my passwords or it doesn't.
Yeah. And another distro that was released in the last week or so was, I think, Bunsen Labs. I took a look at that a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, they one nice little thing that they've got is if you have any kind of need for diagnostics, what they have is there's a file that's under etc Bunsen install. It holds the information about the system install method, version, date, and other kinds of things that can help with diagnostics. So they've got, and they also apparently have simplified the man pages for some of the executable scripts and things that they use. So that's a nice addition for their latest version.
And there's a new IP Fire out. And if you're not familiar with IP Fire, it comes out of Germany. It is a Linux-based firewall. And it's pretty neat because it's one of the few ones, not a lot of the popularity, and I'm a big fan of the pfSense and the BSD-based ones, but I thought this is kind of cool. It's still a lot of development in the Linux world. So maybe I'll take a look at it sometime. I haven't reviewed any firewalls in a while because I've been just doing so many videos just on pfSense, which it's one of those things, it's the Swiss Army knife of firewalls, but I'm always interested in seeing some of the other things on there because I know, I can't remember if it's this one, a couple of them had support for building in Tor and making it easier so you can use it as a Tor node, which I'm trying to remember if it was IP Fire or one of the other ones, but yeah, there's still a lot of software-defined firewalls out there, and I'd like to see if they just keep getting more updates.
Yep.
I think that's it for the releases.
Yeah, and I don't know if it makes sense for me to talk a little bit about Pop! OS now or if we want to slide that in toward the end. Pop! OS is, of course, the distro that comes...
Okay. Now's a good time. We're on the distro topic, so let's dig into a little bit of Pop! OS. Now, if you're not familiar with Pop! OS, that's from the folks at System 76.
That's correct.
Their own spin on Linux.
Yes, and I had a chance to experiment with it the last couple of weeks, and of course what they did, and the experimentation I did was with 1710, and this past week they just released, you know, with the release of the latest Ubuntu version, and because PopOS is based on Ubuntu, they released their new version based on that. So some of my material will be a little dated, so I'm not going to go into any great detail. And as I think I said when we were getting ready for the show, that I was going to do a little bit of a comparison, I think, between 1710 and 1804, just to see how, you know, my take on it. Of course, for people who buy that laptop from System 76, it's going to come installed if you opt to go with Pop OS. But you can certainly download it from their site. I think that they only have the 64-bit version. You know, and one thing I want to mention too, in looking at some of the distros, another one has dropped their 32-bit. There's 32-bit versions of distros are just going.
Yes,
it's going the way of the buggy whip, as
it
they
is
say.
Going away. And 64-bit processors are plentiful and inexpensive. You can buy plenty of even used hardware now that's 64-bit, so it's pretty available.
Yep, and once I went through the install process, and it's kind of a, as I recall, it was a two-phase install. You do the basic install, and then there's the customization that occurs afterwards. And one thing that was kind of interesting is that. There's the standard questions about keyboard layout and that type of thing. And then you also have an option to connect your quote-unquote online accounts. Now, you might be wondering what those are. The natural Google, Facebook. I'm ready to delete mine. And they even have Microsoft. So if you want to do that, so you can certainly do that. But they also have things like Nextcloud, enterprise login, some of the other media server, if you've got one of those. That's kind of nice, I guess, as far as getting it set up if you're going to be, if that laptop is going to be part of a larger network, and there's some of these other...
I kind of like when they do some of these integrations. They can be handy so you can just be smoother when you're transitioning. So when the OS, not just through a web browser, but the OS itself has some level of integration with an online service, makes it a little bit more convenient.
Yes, and I think one thing I did note, too, is when I looked at 1710, after you provide your name and your username and all of that, I believe that I also could encrypt the home folder, but I think by default they're encrypting the home folder with 1804, which is something a little bit different. It was still, I guess, optional back when I took a look at 1710, but it's by default now it's going to be set up that way, and that's just another security feature, which I think is probably a good thing to do. One thing too that they've got is they've got something called I actually like the name. It's called Pop Shop.
Ooh, Pop Shop.
Yeah, Pop Shop.
So it has, like, I'm going to guess that might be a
store. I immediately thought of Faygo, which is of course a local soda pop company, and they have their swag or their merch site is called the Pop Shop.
Ah, okay. So, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know they had a merch
Hopefully
site.
There'll be no lawsuits, no copyright lawsuits. But anyway, so it's called the Pop Shop, and it certainly has the full gamut of various applications that you'd want to install, from multimedia-type things to graphics to, it actually already comes with LibreOffice installed. So, but if you have a need for some application for some project, more than likely it's going to be available in that Pop Shop. Also, they are now they are doing some automatic background updates in the firmware, which. Kind of caught me by surprise, because when I was I was running it in a VirtualBox, but what I noticed is that there was like this little update icon or a little update notification I got, and then it just disappeared and I couldn't find it. I looked all over for it, and it's my belief, although I didn't really have a chance to empirically confirm it, that those are probably the background updates that System 76 automatically takes care of. Aside from that, there are the application updates that you as a user have control over. And when you have when you get that notification, then a little window will open, and then you can opt to individually select your updates, or you can go to the top of the column and just hit update all. So there is some user choice as far as how you handle that. The other thing too is I took a look at repositories they had, and they pretty much have all of the Ubuntu repositories, including the security ones, et cetera, et cetera. I did take a look. They've got a couple of things pinned, which of course are for some of their custom things that they do. But it really looked, for the most part, from what I could see in my quick look, mostly stock Ubuntu with some of their little customizations in there. And again, that pop shop was really kind of interesting. One thing I will note, when I did get my updates, there was this interesting little window that popped up that indicated that there was an error installing the VirtualBox Guest X11. So suddenly then, if you're a user who might not be familiar with opening up a terminal and running a dpkg configure-a, somebody might be a little bit out of sorts. But I went back to the System76 website, and they do represent this Pop! OS as more of a developer-type OS. So in my opinion, then, it's not going to be any issue for them at all, nor was it an issue for me, but I was just thinking, when we say Pop!, it just sounds light and airy and, just a regular user versus
developers. That's all what Linux is about.
That old Steve Ballmer joke.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that was one little, I'll call it a glitch, and it was just simply when I clicked the install button as part of that whole update menu. So, a couple of other little things here.
I'll comment that it is really pretty. Like the Pop! OS, like all the way the graphics and the aesthetic of it.
It was. And I want to give them kudos for that because it was very modern looking. Sometimes you can get an operating system or a desktop environment that really looks a little dated. A lot of times that's just due to the fact that the laptop or the machine that you've got it on may have some limited capabilities, so they're not going to put any whiz-bang desktop on there. If you can't handle it. So, I mean, that was kind of my take.
I got to admit, when we heard they were announcing this, over a year and a half ago, when they had some announcements a little bit that they were working on this, mm-hmm. I'm like, why? Do we need another distro? I mean, we'll cover it, but I'm impressed, though.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is it was interesting when the updates first appeared on my screen, it just said I had three updates, and one was a quote-unquote system update, and then the other two were just the VirtualBox updates. So I clicked on the system update, and then all of a sudden I had 300 updates. So, they have it kind of wrapped up into just that category. So, and that's kind of, that's kind of nice, I guess. Let's see here. And the desktop is very clean. I mean, there's not a lot of stuff on it. It uses GNOME, of course. I want to say 3.26. Well, before I commit to that, I'll wait till I take a look at 1804.
Yeah. See what they're using in the latest version.
Yeah. So, anyway, but that's just a kind of a quick look at Pop! OS. Something to kind of take a look at. And, I wasn't that impressed with the GNOME desktop.
Yeah. I mean,
it was okay.
Once you're a KDE fan like myself, it's always a little different when you look at that.
But there's some nice things about it. I mean, it's just not mine, not my type.
I will comment, don't Google search for Pop! OS, because you'll find Pop!OS Fiesta del Muskan.
There we go.
It's actually Pop! !! space OS when you Google search, and that will land you on the right page, or go to system76.com/pop. Mm-hmm. So I'll throw that in there because I just typed in Pop! OS, because that's what I do, and I found Pop!OS.
Yeah.
All right.
Ready so that's for... my yeah. So that's my little quick look at Pop! OS.
Interesting. I like it. I'm gonna take a look at it.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the news.
Tech news and views.
Now, do you want to start, Mary?
I certainly can.
Okay.
Firefox is going to be showing sponsored content that's personalized, but private.
Yes.
You know, and I tell you, you know, we use, of course, free browsers, but developing those browsers and keeping them up and maintaining them and securing them and all of that takes time and money.
Yes.
So what's interesting about Firefox's approach is that, you know, we all don't want to be tracked, or at least a lot of people don't. Maybe there's some who live their life online. But what's kind of interesting about Firefox's approach is that they are having all of this customization occur on the client side and not out on their server, per se, so that they're able to then represent that it's private because it's really happening. It stays on your side of things,
right,
rather than.
And this is, you know, this is the back and forth. And I'm gonna reach out to the crowd here for a show of hands. How many of you donate money to open source projects you use? I got a few people raise their hand on there.
We don't mean to shame you guys.
We're not shaming at all, but it's one of those
things. Well, I guess we did, but we didn't mean to.
And I do understand a lot of people have limited funds and maybe cannot. That is completely valid, and that's one of the things I like about Linux and the open source is that you can get started, and maybe it does turn into a career where you can give back to the community either by code, by writing help manuals, or sometimes by just throwing money at the project. There's many ways you can give back to an open source project, but it's one of those things. They have not found enough support to make it really viable, so that's kind of why they're going down this path. And I've seen a lot of hate for it, but the fact that they let you completely opt out of it without doing anything nefarious, there's always the worry, of course, that they'll say, well, too many users opted out, so let's force it down their throat. I mean, there is always that balance. I'll take a question.
Have you managed to do ad targeting on the client side?
Yes, it's kind of, I didn't dig into the real technical details, but they're keeping everything fairly anonymous so they can send information back up to them and they distribute it. It's they put some thought into it. I didn't read the technical details. I read an overview of it, but it looks like they put some thought into how to keep you anonymous.
And the underlying technology comes from Pocket, which if you've seen that, that's that little app that you can store your links and those kinds of things in that you use. Apparently is going to be staying on the client side, and how well that succeeds, I guess, remains to be seen.
And the reality is, it's open source. If you don't like it, spin it up, compile your own browser, and start another fork of it. I mean, it's completely. There's other ones that have done this. It's to me, that's a completely acceptable answer. And even Firefox, they're open source with a public license. So this is something you could do if you don't like it. You can recompile it without it even. The source code is available to you. So I understand they kind of have to make money because browsers are. They're operating systems now. We call them browser because that's what we've always called them, but if you really dig under it, you can run almost like a complete OS with HTML5. So you're talking about like high levels of things. That means a lot of code, a lot of programming to keep you secure needs to be implemented in there. This was shown in the Pwn2Own challenge that they do every year, that their pockets just aren't as deep. Mozilla could not have the payouts as big as Chrome for bug hunting and bounty hunting for finding bugs, which, of course, maybe would lessen their security because people, well, why would I poke at it? I can't get a prize for it. I can sell it on the black market versus Chrome's like $500,000 if you can crack our stuff. I mean, they've offered some huge bounties that is just beyond the budget of Firefox. So it's kind of money does come into play on these. We want these things to be secure. So I understand it. I'm compassionate to their situation that they can only do so much. So.
Yeah, so good comments.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, Calamari's, and for those of you who may not be aware, Calamari's is a distro-agnostic installer, even though it's not under the KDE umbrella, I think it tends to be used fairly frequently there. They've been accepted in the Google Summer of Code, which is kind of cool. They're going to be working with doing some things more around the LVM, Linux Volume Manager, which apparently the full-time developers that use that are it's something they're somewhat loath to deal with, but they're going to be they have an intern that a student that's going to be working on that during the summer, so that's kind of cool. I liked seeing that.
Yes.
The other thing too, and we already talked about the hack in the hotel rooms.
Yeah.
The other thing too is that. The Ubuntu 18.10 code name is probably out of this world. Now, I saw this on OMG Ubuntu. Somebody has kind of taken the word cosmic. So, of course, the next word up is, I think, C, right?
Yeah.
After Bionic Beaver, see Cosmic something or other. So they're not sure what's up there, but they were talking about Cosmic Crocodile, some other crazy names. So
I like that.
Yeah, we'll see what's happening there.
I could go with Cosmic Crocodile.
Yep. Then there is, I don't know, Tom, if you're aware of this, but there's either setting up or are in the process of doing it, a Wayback Machine for source code.
Ooh.
Well, yes.
The other side of it is, I guess it comes to what you're looking at. So in GitHub, I can look at previous releases.
Yeah, and they're talking about the possibility of doing that. This is an article I actually just found, and I wanted to just make a mention of it. So what I'll do is provide the link to it so folks can read that in the show notes.
But that would be kind of interesting to host it with the Wayback Web Machine and things like that. You know what I would love, and maybe if there's some way we can organize this on the internet in some way, to get old developers that have old products out there, and this directly relates to something me and Jay were talking about with games and the retro games, is can we get the source code to some of those old things, if it's out of copyright, have the developer, before they pass on, sign off on the source code and release it to the public. Even if it was written in 1981, it still might be interesting to see some of the code for that. Because I know that's something archive.org, who hosts the Wayback Web Machine, they keep an archive of a lot of old programs and things like that.
Yep.
Don't lose it to history.
Yep, and I think that's pretty much. I've got a couple of quick, KDE live things that, KDE corner things that I can talk about. Caden Live Sprint News. They're going to be. They got together in Paris recently and are going to be. The developers to kind of talk and sometimes being face to face rather than at a distance can really amp up the development. Process.
Yeah, getting a bunch of coders in a room together, there's something about that still. As much as we do things online, there's still something about being in person.
Yeah. So that's all I got.
I'll jump in here with XCP-NG 7.4.1, the free Libre Zen server.
I was just going to say that. No.
Yeah.
Good for you.
So, I've been excited about this project, and it actually started with Citrix Zen Server had made the decision to not have things out for free anymore. So Citrix, the commercial company, has been doing a support for the Zen project and the Zen hypervisor. And their spin of it has gotten more and more weird licensing and pain in the butt. Matter of fact, you can't even find a download link anymore for Zen Server from Citrix unless you register with them just to get the download links, which I think is kind of wrong. They've also removed the previous versions that didn't have these license requirements. They've scrubbed them from their site and links and blog posts. The more they push one way, of course, it's open source, so fork them. And that they did. XCP are the same people who are behind the Zen Orchestra project. So it is a free full spin of Zen Server with all the features enabled that you can get for free. The business model that you have behind it is there is xcpng.org, which is the free Zen Server, all source code included, and xcpng.com, which is if you'd like to buy support. So if you need help setting it up and configuring it. So that's kind of they have a business model behind it. You can buy paid support if you want, but all of our products are free. And I give away a lot of tools, so I'm going to be doing some more reviews. I've done some basic reviews of it, but I'm going to do some in-depth reviews on those tools because it's great. I like the way Zen Server works, and a lot of people in the commercial industry are always like all about VMware all the time, and I'm like, take a look at Zen. It's a really powerful tool. It is used commercially. It has a pretty popular install base. I mean, not as big as VMware because they were first to market, but it's still a great virtualization product.
And Cubes, I think, uses Zen as its...
I think in the internal, they use Zen internally at the core of it.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't see this article that you didn't have, though, about KDE 5 Plasma. Their new updated stack should now be in good shape for free BSD ports.
You know, I did have that, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they've updated kind of the way they package it.
But I saved it for you.
Saved it for me. Mary, if you don't know, is a big FreeBSD fan, so they're repackaged the way Plasma comes together, so it's going to be easier to port over to the BSD side of the world, which I think is pretty cool. That's an article over on Phronix. I've got a link in the show notes here for building DIY, building my ideal router for $50. I thought this was kind of a fun write-up, and it's fairly detailed and in-depth, so I'm not going to cover every piece of it, but it's building your own Linux router. This guy did a nice blog write-up, kind of steps you through how to build it, how to set it up, how to configure it, and getting everything going. It's pretty slick, and all the tools he used, and, of course, some of the hardware that was used and involved in putting it together, so I thought that was pretty neat. Now, these two articles are directly related, and everyone did send this to me and tweeted at me, and a lot of us. So we covered it, but this is a little bit more in-depth on this. So the Microsoft has a Linux kernel. True, false. Yes, it is a Linux kernel. No, they're not trying to get into the desktop market. It's more specifically...
They should, yeah.
It's more specifically the Azure Sphere. And what Azure Sphere is, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about this at another show, maybe as a fresh looks. It's an interesting concept, and I think it's good for them to get in this, and it is one of the most free licenses they've given away. This is a kernel designed for basically small devices, IoT devices. So it's first time in a long time Microsoft's jumped into the ARM world, and I think it's good for the vendors, because a lot of the vendors, the reason we have so many IoT security problems is because the vendors are not coders. They are not. They want to make their ARM chips. They want to make you a toaster that connects to the internet. But the operating system is a secondary thought, so they just grab whatever they can find, even if it was from 3 years ago, full of security vulnerabilities, and start sticking it on the device to get the device out the door. The IoT Sphere, they've worked with a lot of vendors. They're giving them a free tool set called Azure Sphere. Now, Microsoft's reason for doing this is not altruistic, per se. It's because it does tie into the Azure dashboard, and you can buy Azure services for it and everything else. So they have a money-making model where they give the software free, but offer the hosting in there. But it is interesting to see them getting into the market, because we know the IoT represents massive breaches in security, because a lot of these botnets are running on toasters that have not been patched in years, and they were probably insecure from the day of the release. So it's interesting. We're going to keep watching the market and see how that does. So they did get into the Linux kernel development world a little bit, but it's not in the way a lot of people think. It's for these IoTs. And of course, the intent of it, if you follow the money, is to sell Azure services. So it's still kind of novel. And I got some show note links in there. Rebound. This was kind of neat. So who's ever coded something and copy-pasted right into Stack Exchange to figure out why that output is not what you expected? So, yeah, I think everyone. Rebound is a command line tool that instantly fetches Stack Overflow results when you get a compile error. And it's rather clever. It goes through and you dump it right to it and highlight it, and it jumps right over it and starts pulling the Stack Overflow results. Now, all we need to do is someone could probably take that and automate it, and then if it could then find the best answer and then put it into your code on the line, that's the next extension of this, and then it'll start writing its own code. So you can kind of muddle your way through code at some point. And I don't know, I just pressed enter a few times and it went out to the internet and fixed up the property. I like where he's going with it. I think it still should be learned as a unit, a learning tool. Someone was flaming the person for saying, no, you're ruining learning. I'm like, not really. The people who want to know, I mean, there's always those auto magical curl commands to install complete things. I like to look through all of them myself, but I already know there's someone who doesn't. I think if you're either that person who likes to look through all the code or you're not, and you are happy to copy paste anything anyone has into your code, you're going to do that whether this tool makes it convenient or not. Yeah, I see some people raising their hand on that. So I thought that was kind of, it was a pretty novel tool. I'll have a link in the show notes for that. And I'm trying to wrap my head around how all of it works. It's becoming popular. It's interesting. It's decentralized secure communications via the Matrix system. I'm really trying to grasp how it all works and how it all integrates. I've been playing with it. I've right away signed up for an account and started talking to people. Picture IRC at the next level, and it's kind of neat. I got to really dig into it. I understand it's easy to work. It's easy to get us up from the top level side. I want to know the mechanics behind it, so I've been starting to read through the documentation. It's really fascinating. And the tool on top of it is called Riot, which is kind of an easy web interface to get you chatting online securely. And so I really like it. Of course, it's got self-hosted options. It's got peer hosting options where you can integrate different chat rooms together, so it kind of distributes and the chat room across several servers. So it's a pretty neat project, but it's definitely, as much as I like IRC, I got to admit, the younger generation, they're not on it. And I kind of get worried occasionally when I see nothing but people over 50 using something. I'm like, we kind of do need a next generation at some point. We'd mentioned this about the BSD development. When you see nothing but older people contributing to it, we won't all live forever. There's just a fact right now we have to deal with. So I like to see some. I did notice a lot of younger developers are excited about this. So hopefully this will be something interesting. I'm not giving up on IRC. I'll still be on there. And yes, they have bridges to connect it to IRC. see, so we can pull the other people into and have great communication. This is better than Slack, because this is what a lot of people have defaulted to, is using Slack and other proprietary systems. This is nice. It's all open source, open communication, open protocols, and lots of encryption built in. So definitely something we're going to keep a watch on and dig into, and I'll share my knowledge as I gain it. Right now, I signed up for an account stage, and it was cool. And that's what I have for the news. We didn't talk really about a podcast, but the hotel hack first. The sky's not falling, although it does make a great headline that all these hotels are insecure. But I will cover real quick how the hack works. They have to take a number of old, disposed of, or even current room key cards. Now, because the room key cards are serialized, they can derive what the keys are for the site code with enough of them. So there's really not enough entropy in the RFID tag of the card. So once they use these RFID readers and they have enough data, they can start making assumptions. And then they can take those assumptions to the next level because the card numbers are serialized. And the way they're serialized is so when I program a card at the front desk and I hand it to you so it opens just your room, that serialization is what they're attacking, because there's only so many key combinations. It does have decent amount of security, but if they have enough cards, they can derive the key code that's for that site and then start the attack of serialized numbers on there. So there's going to be, they haven't released full details, so it's just been some reverse engineering to put this together, but it's still fascinating. But the good news is it takes a lot of hardware. It took a lot of effort to do this. The person is not making all the code public for people just to go ahead, download, and do so. They're cautious about it because they want to make awareness that with a determined enough person it can happen, but it still takes, it's not like you can just walk up to any room and just walk in. So it's still non-arbitrary, but it's there, and as we know, once it starts only gets better.
so just use your the security latch that's on your door. That's how you fix that.
Yeah, and it all started with the guy who lost the laptop that was removed from his room. Always, and we talked about this in our last security talk, encrypt. That way it is an inconvenience and an anger thing when your laptop is lost, but not a security breach. So still keep in mind for all that.
That's right.
All right, and that's all I got for the news.
All right. Well, I think we've...
come down to the end.
We've pretty much covered it.
Yeah.
So
I think that's it for the Sunday. I don't even know what time it is. Oh, 10 o'clock.
It's 10 o'clock.
And I'm cold.
Yeah.
This is our second room, and it's warmer than the first room, it is not exactly warm in here. We'd love to thank everyone from the audience in here that joined us. I'll be around here at PenguinCon. Everyone wants to chat with me, talk with me about really anything. I'm going to give a shout out to 5150s in the back over there.
That's right. He's in the house. Yes.
Yep. So, all right. You've been listening to
the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 274, Cinco Penguinos. This is Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us. or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.